I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester, his name is John Anilio, and you're listening to episode number 172 of The Functional Nerds. And John, first yes. things first, just not necessarily in that order.
I know. Well, that is Patrick Hester. He is an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. He's also a Hugo winner. I don't know if I've mentioned that on the podcast yet,
once
but Patrick Hester is a Hugo winner for the SF Signal site.
You're jealous of my giant, massive rocket, aren't you?
I am, and you know, I don't know if I was telling you this, but I think I was telling you this off air. But I was at a publishing event in New York about a month ago, and someone was introducing me to someone else, and they were like, and I was like, oh yeah, and I do the Functional Nerds podcast, and I believe it was Peter V. Brett that was like, oh, don't you do the SF Signal one? And I'm like, I did for like the first two, and then I didn't, and I really chose the wrong one because that's the Hugo winning thing that I don't associate myself with anymore. So really good on my part. But anyway, that is Patrick Hester. His website is atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. I am John Anilio, and I do the Functional Nerds podcast, not the SF Signal one, not the Hugo-nominated SF Signal podcast. I don't do that one because I'm stupid, I'm a songwriter and a composer, and you can check out my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And today we are delighted to have Django Wexler. Django graduated from Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh with degrees in creative writing and computer science, and worked for the university in artificial intelligence research. Eventually, he migrated to Microsoft in Seattle, where he now lives with two cats and a teetering mountain of books. When not planning shadow campaigns, he wrangles computers, paints tiny soldiers, and plays games of all sorts. His book is The Thousand Names. You can get that. That's out right now. And you can check out his website, DjangoWexler.com. You can follow him on Twitter. I believe it's just at Django Wexler, DjangoWexler Wexler. Django, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. And yeah, that's my Twitter. DjangoWexler.
And Django was his name.
Or as you know, ever since the Quentin Tarantino movie came out, I say the D is silent, and people are like, oh yeah.
You know, it's really quite funny because Patrick was making reference to your name in that movie, and I know Patrick met you at a con, and I'm sure you've had this before the movie came out, or maybe you haven't, but when I was telling Patrick, I'm like, you know, but when I see the name Django, because I'm a guitar player, I think of Django Reinhardt, who I'm sure someone must have told you about Django Reinhardt in your life at one point or the other.
I'm actually named after Django Reinhardt. That was my actual namesake, not the old Western.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I got to hear the story why they named you after Django Reinhardt. I have to hear that now.
I honestly wish there was more of a story. My mom was reading a book and started reading about Django Reinhardt, and she just thought the name was really cool. My mom's not a jazz guitarist or a big history, but she is a sort of collector of names. I'm thankful that, you know, that some of her picks that she told me about later would have been a little more eclectic. I could have been Nebuchadnezzar, for example.
Yeah.
I would have loved to try to spell that. I don't think I could spell it.
Right. Well, and I think Django Reinhardt is such an interesting character as a human being. And for Patrick, because I don't think you were familiar with him, what's interesting about him is he's one of the more famous jazz guitar players of that era, and he had dazzling physical technique. He could just play really fast and clean lines and was really quite an innovator in that way. But what was so amazing about it was he was in a fire when he was a child, and his fretting hand was really severely damaged and deformed, where he only was able to use his index finger and his middle finger. So all these fast runs that he did, two fingers.
Wow.
That's all he had on his fretting hand. His other two fingers were there, but they were sort of like, I think his pinky and his ring finger were sort of fused together almost. Mm-hmm. So he really came over quite a disability to be one of the more technical guitar players of his time. So there's a real interesting story about him. So I've always enjoyed that. So that's what I think of when I hear the name Django. That's what I think of. I think of Django Reinhardt. So that's really cool. I'm glad you have that connection to him, Django. That's neat. Mm-hmm. Well, let's, I was thinking like maybe we can, before we get into that, we didn't really mention anything about Django's book other than the name.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Django, why don't you tell us about The Thousand Names and why people should go and buy it?
You'd think I'd be good at that by now. The Thousand Names is a military fantasy. It's, set in a world roughly equivalent to the 18th century on Earth. It's kind of vaguely based on, the Napoleonic Wars. And I describe it as either George Martin with guns or Bernard Cornwall with magic, depending on which direction you're coming at it from. I tried to stick to a world that's sort of historically plausible with sort of little bits of magic in it, because that's sort of what. But it's the story of a rebellion in a colonial state and the campaign to sort of re-subjugate the natives, with all the sort of moral ambiguity that implies, since the subjugating is not exactly a heroic task. And I think it's a lot of fun. If you like, cannons and muskets and cavalry charges and that kind of exciting stuff, then you'd probably enjoy it.
Well, we had Brian McClellan on a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And your books are they've gotten mentioned in the same breath in our circles a little bit, but he said he just read your book and it's very different than him, tonally at least, anyway.
Brian and I are eternally because we came out with books that are sort of similar in not too similar, but similar in like setting.
Yes.
And we're both debut authors. We're both in hardcover and we came out within 2 months of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately Brian's awesome. So I don't mind being joined at the hip to him, but, it's, his book is much more about sort of politics and, mm-hmm. There's a lot of personal action. There's, exciting rooftop chases and magical battles. And mine is much more of a kind of a military thing. It's about war. The characters are all soldiers. Mm-hmm. And so they're different. I liked his book a lot. I should make, it's really good. The Powder Mage series, which I think the second one, The Crimson Campaign, is coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, I think he said it's kind of coming out in February. And when is book two coming out for you then?
In July. Okay. We're doing a sort of once a year pace. So The Thousand Names came out in July. This book comes out in next July. I also have a children's series, a middle grade fantasy series, that starts with The Forbidden Library, which comes out in April. That I'm really excited about. It's a lot of fun. It's about a girl who, her father disappears mysteriously and she's sent to live with her kind of sketchy uncle, and he has a gigantic magical library that she has to sneak into and learns that she has magical powers.
Cool. What publisher is putting that one out then?
It's Penguin. It's an imprint of Penguin called Kathy Dawson Books, which used to be part of Dial, but Kathy Dawson's actually my editor and she got her own imprint.
Cool. Is it Randy Penguin?
No, it's not Randy Penguin.
Okay.
Cool. Well, that sounds great. And when is that due to come out then, Django?
April 15th. So, excellent. That's kind of what I'm focusing on right now. I have that on the brain.
John, did you get the Randy Penguin reference?
I didn't.
Okay.
But,
so I'm charging you.
I clearly didn't.
I'm charging you both looking it up.
All right.
Okay. Don't worry, Django. This is how this show goes. Patrick cracks jokes and no one gets them, so we have to then just move on. That's kind of our thing.
I will make sure to laugh retroactively when I understand the joke.
That's all you can hope for, Patrick, is retroactive laughs. Mm-hmm. That's really...
I'll throw you a clue. Great. Random House,
okay.
And Penguin.
Right. Yeah. I got you.
I got that.
All right. Well, you know, that sounds great, Django, and I wish you luck with both of those. But let's now move on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
I'm going to go first this week, and I'm actually going to pick Almost Human, which is the new show that's out on Fox right now. I believe J.J. Abrams produces it. I don't know if he has much to do with the writing or the creation of it. But
he's the busiest man alive. Actually.
He is. Yeah, he's got his hands
Brandon Sanderson.
Yes. Yeah. J.J. Abrams is the Brandon Sanderson of film and television, or vice
versa. That's an insult to Brandon Sanderson.
Oh, I don't know. I like J.J. But anyway, Almost Human has been out. I think there's three episodes out right now, and I'm actually watching them on my Roku player. Fox, of all networks, actually has their own streaming channel now on Roku, which is really interesting because none of the other networks have one, but they have all of their shows up that you could just watch.
Wow.
You have to watch the commercials too. But it's nice. So I've been watching it that way. And, I love it. I love the show. I think it's the best, science fiction show that I've seen so far this year. Yeah. I think it's great. I sort of gave it a try because I like JJ typically, and Carl Urban is the lead. Carl Urban, most people probably know from the Star Trek reboot. Also, he was Judge Dredd, which I just watched Judge Dredd like a couple weeks ago, and I liked, or just Dredd, it's called the new version. He was also, was he Éomer? Who was he in Lord of the Rings? He was in Lord. Yeah, Éomer. So I liked him. He's the lead, and I'm like, I'll watch this. I'll give it a shot. And I liked the first episode just fine. And then the second episode, I was really hooked on it. It's in the future cop show, and every human cop is paired with a android cop. So there is sort of hints of Blade Runner and all that kind of stuff in it, but it's really well done. The stories have been great. The dialogue's been good. The world is good. The characters and the acting is great. The man that plays the android partner, I believe his name is Michael Ealy, is excellent. And it's sort of a different take on it because it's kind of the android is more human than the human is in this case. So it's very,
that's
really
never
well
been done.
Before. Well, I thought it wasn't the way I thought they were going to go with it, honestly. But it's really well done, and I'm really enjoying it. So it's on Fox. I believe it's on Monday nights if you watch it live. So that is my pick, Almost Human. Django, what? Django.
I'll have to check that out. I remember being intrigued by the concept and then for some reason turned off by the trailers that they kept showing. And being like, oh, that doesn't look very good.
They showed trailers?
Maybe I'll have to give it a try.
They showed trailers?
I kept seeing the trailers at the movies for some reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did advertise
them.
This one.
You could not
heavily.
Escape them.
But I really like it. It's very well done. I'm digging it. So Django, what's your pick this week?
My pick this week. This week is hard actually because I've been reading some books that were not very good. So I may have to go back. The last two really good books that I read, I read The Troop by Robert Jackson Bennett, which is a lot of fun. It's sort of set in the world of vaudeville, and then there's this magic plot that's really cool. It's good writing, which is a lot of good. I read Cat Rambo's anthology Near Plus Far, which I really can't say enough good things about. It's like a bunch of really great stories. I highly recommend that. There's some anime that's pretty good, but we'll probably get to that later.
Save that for our main topic.
So I'll stick to that. So The Troop and Near Plus Far are the last two books that I read that are really good. I recommend it in particular, the latter, pick that up if you can. You can get it on, physical copies may be hard to come by because it's a small press, but you can get it on the Kindle. So,
I will go ahead and second The Troop by Robert Jackson Bennett. I read that book last year too, and I really loved it. He's a great writer, very very unique voice, especially in genre. So, I recommend that book as well. So cool, Patrick. What is your pick this week?
Can you guess?
I'm guessing. I'm guessing it's the new Doctor Who.
Doctor Who 50th anniversary, yes. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. Got to see it not only on BBC America, but also in the theater.
I know you were telling me about that.
I did screw up. Yes, I did screw up though. I thought I was buying the 3D ticket, and I did not buy the 3D ticket, so I just saw it in regular 2D. But it was a lot of fun. It was, I think, one of the best episodes Moffat has been involved with. I'm not a huge fan of some of the stuff that he does, but the 50th anniversary, I think he hit a home run. I think he did a lot in that episode. He nodded to old fandom, and while also kind of hugging new fandom, and he brought hope back to the show, which I thought was kind of cool. He kind of twisted the concept of the Doctor. The Doctor has been running away from home for 50 years, and now he's going to try to run back home, which I thought was very cool.
Cool. Yeah, most of the people, and I am very behind on Doctor Who. I watched the first two new seasons, and I haven't seen it in a while, and it seemed like most people on Twitter liked it. There was a very vocal minority who did not like it. I saw a good bit of that, of people like
I'm shocked that there was anybody in the genre community who was complaining. That never happened.
I know that's not this community. Typically, they typically don't complain about things. But there was some that were just like nasty too. Like, I'm just like, wow. I don't know. It's just a show.
Oh, I know. I mean, I'm not into the Doctor Who universe at all. But I know Stephen Moffat has his detractors, and a lot of them, I think, the same set of people who just don't like him at all also didn't like the 50th anniversary.
Well, if you go to the SF Signal podcast yesterday, because this will go live on Tuesday and SF Signal goes live on Monday, Fred, Jeff, and myself, we talk about this. And one of the things that I've always said is Moffat likes to be clever. He likes you to understand that he's clever. And I feel like he has spent the last couple of years trying to undo everything that Davies did and return it to, quote unquote, classic Who. Mm-hmm. Because that's who he is, and that's where he comes from.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that's good or bad?
I think that's bad. I think it's when Davies was the showrunner, it was the most open and accessible sci-fi show on TV, and anybody could jump in at any point and really get into it and really enjoy it. And Moffat does things that make it so that you have to start at the beginning of the season. And I think that hurts him a little bit. And on top of that, you know, I just feel like when he started, one of the first things the Doctor noticed was that Amy and Rory did not remember all the things that had happened in the last couple of years. They didn't remember the Daleks attacking. They didn't remember the Cybermen attacking. They didn't remember the Christmas star, you know, the spider thing. So it was like none of that had happened. And it led a lot of people to believe that something weird had gone on. And like he wasn't even on the same Earth anymore. So it's stuff like that makes me go, what the hell's he doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, but you liked it, and I think you were sort of in the majority. I think a lot of people did like that episode.
It reminded me, and I talk about this on SF Signal, it reminded me of the first anniversary show, which is called The Three Doctors. And in that one, you had the older Doctor, Hartnell, you had the two younger Doctors in Pertwee and Troughton, and there was this great chemistry between the three of them. And that's what it kind of harkened back to, because you had John Hurt as the older, kind of irascible Doctor, and then you had the two younger ones in Tennant and Smith, and there was just this great back and forth between the three of them. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, once I get back into Doctor Who, I look forward to watching that episode, like, you know, 50 episodes from where I'm at now.
Around the time the 75th anniversary comes out.
Yes, exactly. It's hard to keep up with all this stuff, but cool. Well, let us get on to our main topic. And our main topic today is anime. We decided to go with this because Django is writing a anime column for SF Signal. So obviously he's into the anime. So I would love to hear.
I can't.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you want to start?
I want to start with
the
question. Django, okay, did you see the post that Robotech represents the greatest love story in the 20th century? between Lisa that, and Rick.
I did not see that
yes,
post.
It's out there.
I don't think I agree with that. I mean, Robotech is justly famous, but a lot of its fame here in the U.S. is because it's kind of like one of the only shows
yes.
that made
yes.
it over here. So it was formative to a lot of people's childhoods. It's one of those things that doesn't super well if you go back and watch
oh,
it
Oh, I
now.
Love it now. I've got it. I've got the whole remastered DVD collection.
I don't know. I mean, it's a fine love story. I don't think I would go with greatest in the 20th century. That's pretty high praise.
Let me ask you this. How often in this country do we get the robotecking of anime? And by that, I mean Harmony Gold took three completely separate series and they cut them, recut them, and packaged them as a quote complete series to get a full television run. How often does that happen here?
The fandom term, since it was Carl Masek was the person in charge, is Masaker. it doesn't happen very much anymore, basically. Back in the day, which I mean when I was a kid, there was no real distribution channel for anime in the United States because the whole business of selling whole seasons of shows on DVD or VHS even had not really been invented yet. And so they needed a way to make these shows syndicatable. And so that meant they went with the real long-running shows, like Sailor Moon, for example, or they did what they did with Robotech, which was take a bunch of 26-episode shows, which was a more sort of typical length for an anime, and combine them into one thing, which worked in that case because it was Macross and then a bunch of other shows that completely ripped off
right.
Macross, and they ripped it off so well that they could actually just be blended into
one
show. Right,
because they look similar throughout.
Yeah, because Macross in Japan was super popular and a bunch of shows immediately copied it.
And then did you see the movie that they did? The Shadow Chronicles?
Oh, no, the American. Yes. No, I did
so
not.
So then they did, just a couple years ago, they did Robotech the Shadow Chronicles, which tied it all together and brought Rick Hunter home to meet uh-huh. the guy from the third series.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tied it all back together.
That's funny. So they finally got some original animation to
yes.
make it all
well, and
work.
It's all CGI.
I did not. Ah, interesting. I did not watch that. There's a bunch of Macross
oh, yeah,
movies.
My God.
From in Japan, although not a lot of them made it over, but in the modern age when they've sort of figured out how to sell anime in the U.S. and the way you sell it is as big DVD packs. For a while, they were selling it as like single discs with two episodes per disc for $20, and that was kind of a ripoff. But the market seems to have favor of whole series as a chunk. And as a result, they don't really need to do that anymore to get it to air. Also, the syndication model on TV has kind of broken down, so you don't have 90 episodes to make a successful show anymore, which is actually good because it means shows like all the sci-fi shows that we like can actually come out.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, if you had a show and you didn't hit that magic syndication number, then you were a failure. And so mm-hmm. every show had to plan to run that long. The demise of the X-Files, for example.
So, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. I'm sorry, John, and I just...
No, go for it. No, I'd say it's in your wheelhouse, man.
Well, a little bit, because I loved Robotech. Do you think that... you talk about back in the day, whenever I would go to Best Buy always had... different sections of DVDs, and so they had comedy, horror, drama, sci-fi, family, and then they would have a whole section on anime. And of course, that's
yeah.
all gone now because Best Buy sucks, and they got rid of all their DVDs.
Yeah.
What do you think about Netflix? I mean, is Netflix helping anime grow in this country? Because, for example,
definitely.
I found Morabito, Guardian of the Spirit. And I loved that series. And it was very short.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't, you know, a whole lot extra. It was this woman warrior, you know, guarding this little kid. And I just thought that was a great series. And it didn't feel like it had any of the over-the-top crazy crap that goes on in anime.
I mean, so a couple of things have happened. I mean, the trends in anime have changed. The series have gotten shorter. 26 episodes used to be a standard series, which was two quarters, and now it's 13. Mm. Some of the market has changed a little bit. I mean, that gets really complicated for Americans to understand. But there has been some drive towards producing more adult shows, because there's this huge market of Japanese otaku who are willing to spend money on shows, although it also leads to these like super hyper cutesy moe shows where like it's like hyper targeted at this one particular demographic because they're the ones with all the money. But Netflix has been a huge boon, I think, because people are just more willing to you know, experiment, right? When you've got a Netflix subscription, you download something, you might as well watch it, you know, much more easily than you'd go out and spend $40 on a DVD collection. And so all kinds of people who I never would have expected to watch are watching stuff, you know, just a show here and a show there now, because it's, you know, it's easy and you don't have to risk a bunch of money, depending on which I don't know if most of the shows are on the instant one where you pay to download them or if they're all on the subscription one. You can probably tell, but I don't actually.
Netflix is streaming or you get a disc. And I do all my stuff on streaming. And so I just add.
Yeah, almost everyone I know does the streaming version now. Do it over their Xbox.
No, don't do that. That's stupid. Because then you got to pay Xbox. You got to pay Microsoft. And I'm against paying Microsoft for anything. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry to Peter Arulian, but I just don't want to pay Microsoft anything. They can go fuck themselves.
In this town, a lot of the people are getting paid by Microsoft. And so there's a lot
of. Well, that's why I said, you know, Peter Arulian is a friend of the podcast, but I don't give a shit.
I know. He lives near here.
So, and I hate the Microsoft One concept altogether. So that's a whole different conversation. But yeah, I have the Blu-ray player, and the Blu-ray player, you can stream Netflix right to it. It's simple.
Yeah.
And you don't have to pay extra.
We have always in my ad a computer that sits behind the TV and runs the TV. And so we can always do whatever we need to on that. So we've never needed another device.
Yeah.
Not that I don't have like 15 game consoles down there.
Well, and that was originally my plan, was I was going to go through Microsoft Xbox 360, because I worked in hell for a little while for a large satellite cable company, and I've said before on this podcast, I'm not going to talk about who they are, but one day I will dish about them. And when I did that, I switched to the Hapa. And so I got rid of my TiVo. Well, when I did that, I lost my ability to stream Netflix, because that company has a competing digital online service. And by competing, they mean it's utter total shit. And so I had to figure out another way to get my Netflix on my TV. And I was going to go through the Xbox, and I found out you have to pay for Xbox Gold in order to get Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, that's bullshit. I don't want to do that. So I just went out and I bought a, you know, $90 Blu-ray player. Boom. I got Netflix again.
I think a lot of people in my acquaintance pay for Xbox Gold because they want to play online games, and so the Netflix is kind of a bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well. Unfortunately, and because this is really short time, because we did get started a little bit later today.
Totally my fault.
It happens all the time, Jenga, and it's my fault too. I should have sent you a email reminder, but not everyone here needs to to know all that. But we do have to wrap it up. We will definitely have to have Jenga come back on when he's got another new book coming out. So hopefully we can continue.
So let's put him on the spot. Let's put him on the spot. Name one anime series you want everybody listening to the podcast to go check out right now. Hello, Django?
Hello. You paused there for a second.
Yeah, you froze for a second.
Oh, okay. I said, name one anime series that you want everyone listening to the podcast to go check out right now.
Oh, that's tough.
And you can't say Bubblegum Crisis.
I would not say that anyway. Well, I'm thinking, because so there's shows that I really like, but I feel like people get unless they're already fans. Well, all right. So, Mahou Shoujo Lyrical Mahou Shoujo Nanoha, Magical Girl Nanoha is like they've taken the standard Magical Girl show and they've made it into a fighting show, which works startlingly well. It's something that, like, on the surface looks kind of cutesy and lame, and then you watch a few episodes and you're like, actually, this is kind of awesome. It's like they've taken the trappings of Magical Girls and made it into like more like a show like Bleach. They spend all their time fighting each other.
Awesome.
And then once you've watched that, then you have to watch Madoka Magica, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the best anime.
Awesome.
Of all time.
John, take it away.
Oh, well, there you go. So Django, like, whoa, what? That's fast. Django, thank you for coming on the show today.
Happy
everyone,
to be here.
You can just check out his website, djangowexler.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Django Wexler. His book is The Thousand Names, and that is out right now. And you can pick that up at all of your fine booksellers, as well as Amazon and all those places. And he's got his children's book, not a young adult, right?
Middle grade. 10 to 12. Although I think lots of people will like it. If you liked Harry Potter, the first Harry Potter is about the right demographic.
Okay, very good. And that's coming out soon, too. And Django, thanks for coming on, and we definitely got to get you back on soon.
All right.
For me this week, just check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And Patrick, what do you have going on?
Check out the SF Signal podcast, of which Django has been on a couple of times now, because since he is contributing to the website, he gets the invites to the podcast.
Sweet. Yay. Sweet. Oh, I should say, if you're interested in anime, I've got an anime column over at SF Signal, yep, where I've been talking about this latest season, and there should be another one going up this Wednesday where I talk about some other stuff, so check it out.
Cool. Very good. Very good. All right, Patrick, that's that it for you? You got everything? All right. Very good, everybody. We will see you next time.
Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day, and all the stars at night. How do you like to spend Christmas on Christmas Island? How do you like to spend a holiday away across the sea? How do you like to spend Christmas on Christmas Island? How'd you like to hang your stocking on a great big coconut tree? How'd you like to stay?
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.